It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. I'm Bill Price. A bombshell announcement today from New York's top law enforcement official. That's where we're going to start at noon. Family Life's Bob Price.
Yeah, Bill, in a scathing 76-page report, New York's Attorney General says the state undercounted deaths in nursing homes from COVID-19 by as much as 50%. Democrat Tish James blames the lack of PPE and testing for the high death rate. Families of nursing home residents blame Governor Cuomo for ordering COVID-positive patients into those facilities instead of hospitals last spring. The official death count at nursing homes from COVID in New York is 8,000. Statewide, 42,000 people have died from this virus, the most of any state in America. Bob Price, Family Life News.
Okay, Bob, we'll have more on that breaking story later in the broadcast. Healthcare overhaul, the other big story at noon.
The executive action blitz continues.
President Biden taking the wraps off his healthcare plan for America today. It's controversial, and it's going to take more executive orders. Fox News reporter Peter Ducey.
He's going to make Obamacare even bigger with two new executive orders. One of them is going to reopen the Obamacare marketplaces for anybody who missed open enrollment because the White House is hoping to get more people covered during the pandemic. There's also going to be an executive order aimed at protecting women's health at home and abroad.
The administration today rescinding a Trump-era policy that prevents U.S. funding for international nonprofits who provide abortions. The controversial move comes a day after President Biden declared climate change a national security priority.
Climate change will be at the center of our national security and foreign policy.
The president putting the brakes on all drilling on federal lands just days after he stopped construction of the Keystone XL pipeline. Climate czar John Kerry.
Unfortunately, workers have been fed a false narrative. They've been fed the notion that somehow dealing with climate is coming at their expense. No, it's not.
What an arrogant, out-of-touch statement for a centimillionaire to say.
Texas Senator Ted Cruz says John Kerry is pouring salt in the wounds of tens of thousands of hardworking Americans who are now out of work because of this administration.
The Democratic elites have decided that blue-collar workers, that union members, men and women with calluses on their hands, you little people, I don't like the choices you're making, and so your jobs go away.
Tomorrow, the administration tackles immigration, capping off a week of different themes and a flurry of executive orders to go along with those themes. Close to 40 orders have been signed so far.
I'm concerned that some of these executive orders, some of these actions that we've seen in the early days, is actually going to increase an immigration or a border security crisis when the country really doesn't need one.
Former acting Homeland Security Secretary Chad Wolf says the president's executive order to stop construction of the southern border wall runs counter to what the men and women of border security want to see. South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham says former President Trump looking pretty good right now.
I mean, look at what's going on at the border. They're unraveling the border security that President Trump put in place. The caravans are forming. They're declaring war on fossil fuel industry in America. National security is best achieved when you don't have to buy oil and gas from people who hate your guts and are crazy.
Graham says at this rate, Republicans will win in a landslide in the midterms in 2 years because most of the country isn't going to go along with the radical left strategies being put forward by the Biden administration. Former President Trump meeting with House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy in Florida today. Those two talking about the upcoming impeachment trial and the need for Republicans and Democrats to get along. Former White House advisor Karl Rove says it's incumbent upon President Biden to start reaching across the aisle.
The question now when we come to legislation is going to be, is he going to try and do it in a bipartisan way or is he not? And we're going to know sooner rather than later. That moment is coming.
Rove says Biden's first real test of unity will come with that massive coronavirus stimulus bill.
Because if you want to have unity and you want to have bipartisanship, then as the president, you've got to lay the predicate by reaching out to the other side.
Rove fears President Biden is being hijacked by the far left, and the policies he's putting forward don't mirror his true political views. The push to reopen schools across the country in this era of COVID-19 has reached a fevered pitch.
Figure it out! Or get off the podium. Because you know what? There are people like me and a line of other people out there who will gladly take your seat and figure it out.
That parent from Northern Virginia says he's had enough. In Chicago, the third largest district in the country, teachers on the verge of going on strike. Mayor Lori Lightfoot.
We need you to work with us. Because we can't get there unless we get there together. And we need to get a deal done for our children.
President Biden has promised to reopen most American schools in his first 100 days in office. Mara Lison at NPR says it's time for kids to get back in the classroom to set the tone for the rest of the country.
No single thing that symbolizes returning to normal than sending your kid back to school. I can't think of anything else. And parents want to go back. Kids want to go back. That's the name of the game. When schools open, people are going to feel like we're getting back to normal.
Earlier this week, the CDC recommended that kids return to the classroom as quickly as they can. Health officials warning of a rough month ahead in the pandemic. 83,000 COVID deaths in the U.S. in the month of January. That's more than any other month since the pandemic began. The CDC says another 85,000 Americans could die from the virus by mid-February. 35 years ago today, the unthinkable happened.
Challenger, go and throttle up.
Space Shuttle Challenger exploded 73 seconds after liftoff, killing all seven crew members on board.
My God. There's been an explosion.
President Reagan addressed the country later that evening.
The crew of the Space Shuttle Challenger honored us for the manner in which they lived their lives. We will never forget them, nor the last time we saw them this morning as they prepared for their journey and waved goodbye and slipped the surly bonds of Earth to touch the face of God.
Who can ever forget those words? The Challenger explosion 35 years ago today. Still to come this Thursday, New York State reopens high school hoops, bounces back. And whatever happened to Scranton Joe?
Good afternoon to all. Well, across our region through the weekend, we expect widespread shivering, but just some localized shoveling. I'll be back to explain your forecast in 10 minutes.
Okay, Kevin Williams, checking the stories making news where you live in New York and Pennsylvania. Thursday, January 28th, our top story again. State Attorney General Tish James says New York Governor Andrew Cuomo undercounted the number of COVID nursing home deaths in the state by as much as 50%. Families of nursing home residents blame the governor for ordering COVID positive patients into those facilities last spring. The official death count at nursing homes from COVID around 8,000. Statewide, 42,000 New Yorkers have been killed by the virus, the most of any other state in the country. New York State is open for business.
Holiday surge was anticipated. The holiday surge did happen, but the holiday surge is over.
Governor Cuomo lifting COVID restrictions yesterday all across the state. Despite the green light to reopen, officials say it's going to take a while for businesses to bounce back.
We have taken tremendous hits in hospitality and retail. So that is really troubling because the folks who are making lower than average wages are really the ones who need the most help, and those are the jobs that have been essentially shuttered.
Dottie Gallagher at the Buffalo Niagara Partnership says she doesn't expect things to get back to normal until herd immunity is reached later this year. As for schools, they no longer need to test for COVID in order to stay open. Mike Cornell, school superintendent, Hamburg, New York.
It was expensive and it was somewhat unwieldy in many ways, and something that according to the governor, our infection rates no longer warrant as a mitigation strategy.
Businesses across New York, meantime, say the loosening of restrictions, the best news they've gotten in a very long time.
The girls can make double the amount of money they were making before. More clients are happier now because they're able to get in sooner. They don't have to wait, and we're ready to rock and roll for the year.
Rochester salon owner Melissa McLaughlin says she can now operate at 50% capacity. Wedding venues across the state can now increase their crowd size too.
We love hosting, of course, weddings in here, but engagement parties, bridal showers, baby showers, the list goes on and on, retirement parties.
Lainey Schmidt at Arbor Venues in Rochester says the loosening of COVID restrictions couldn't come soon enough. Despite the green light to reopen, a restaurant in Fairport is staying closed. Scott Donnelly runs Donnelly's Public House near Rochester.
We'll try to get back to that as best we can.
But, you know, we're going to have to look at, you know, people to get comfortable with that, too, to allow us to do that, not just the state to allow
Donnelly
us.
Donnelly says it bothers him to have to furlough some of his staff, but for now, he's keeping indoor dining off the menu.
You know, I don't want to do the wrong thing and have to face fines that could, you know, jeopardize the future of our business. So we need to be comfortable and feel that we're in an environment that's safe for us to reoperate our business, and that's what we're looking for, whether it's tomorrow or whether it's June. You know, we'll be ready.
Donnelly's restaurant has been closed for nearly a year now. High school basketball bounces back next week in New York. Coaches and players say it's about time.
We've been off for so long. March 13th of last year was when we had to shut everything down. So it's been a long time. Then the uncertainty, not knowing whether or not this season would even be able to happen. So it's great news, and we're excited to get started.
Mike Kaburka with Buffalo Titans says his team is ready to tip off next week. High school cheerleading teams also picking up the pom-poms again.
We are excited. Our families are very excited, of course. They've been desperately waiting to get back to some sense of normalcy. All our athletes are pretty excited, too.
Schools now scrambling to set up schedules and get going again next week. High school hoops in New York. New York State Senate Minority Leader Rob Ort says local leaders are being left out of the loop when it comes to COVID vaccine distribution efforts.
I'm hearing from people, their appointments are getting canceled. They don't know where to go or how to get it. They're frustrated. And it just, once again, I think reinforces people's lack of faith in government.
State Senator Patrick Gallivan says the problem is Governor Cuomo. He's got too much power.
I'm afraid until we go back to governing the way that our system is designed, there will continue to be one person in charge of making all the decisions. It's impossible for one person to be properly serving 19 million people.
In the meantime, Pennsylvania Representative Clint Owlett is supporting a proposed constitutional amendment that would place limits on Governor Tom Wolf's emergency declaration powers. The Northern Tier Republican says this governor has acted like a dictator in how he's handled the COVID pandemic. A political analyst from the Southern Tier says President Biden has made a name for himself by issuing nearly 40 executive orders in his first week on the job.
Lots of presidents, when they come into office, sign executive orders, but Joe Biden has hit the ground running.
Dr. Stephen Coleman says President Biden is setting a dangerous precedent with his nonstop unilateral form of governing.
It goes against how our government is supposed to operate with the legislature, the Congress, as the lawmaking body. It goes against that when the president can sign all these things and they go into effect.
So whatever happened to Scranton Joe? The president changing his tune since his days of standing up for blue-collar workers in his hometown of Scranton. Patrick Morrissey, the attorney general in West Virginia, says this president is out of control.
What he's doing to advance the Green New Deal, and I think this is just the beginning, we're going to begin to see him use this on major issues throughout his presidency. We wanted to set out the guideposts.
Morrissey has joined six other states' attorney general in signing a letter asking the president to put down the pen and start working with Congress.
Given the speed in which they're moving to dismantle the American manufacturing economy and energy jobs in our country, a lot of their initiatives we're seeing, these are the appetizers before the main dish.
Morrissey says he and other attorney generals across the country are prepared to take the Biden administration to court to stop the nonstop executive orders, showing the Steel City some love.
The Macedonia Church of Pittsburgh is helping hundreds of customers at a local Giant Eagle. On Saturday, the church paid the grocery bills of 200 customers. The congregation also gave all 77 employees at the store a $50 gift card for their efforts during the pandemic. Pastor Brian James Edmonds said the church wanted to help because, quote, our world is hurting right now. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
Thank you, Brandon. Sunny time. 2 minute drill.
Yeah, we start in the NBA, and the Lakers are undefeated on the road no longer. Tobias Harris made the go-ahead bucket with 2.4 seconds left. The 76ers beat the Lakers 107-106.
I wanted to just be calm,
I'll be relaxed in that moment and get my shot off and live with the result.
Harris finished with 24 points. The Sixers improved to 13-6. LeBron James led the Lakers with 34 points, and the L.A. falls to 14-5 on the year. In Atlanta, Kevin Durant and James Harden combined for 63 points. The Nets outlasted the Hawks 132-128 in overtime. Kyrie Irving adding 26 points and said, team win.
You know, a lot of our guys come off the bench and give us a lot of much-needed energy. Just give them credit, and I'm grateful to have teammates like that.
Brooklyn won their third in a row. The Nets have won 7 of their last 9 to get to 12-8. The Cavaliers big over the Pistons 122-107. Raptors fall to the Bucks 115-108. In the NFL, the Seattle Seahawks are releasing a statement after disturbing details emerged about former offensive tackle Chad Wheeler's domestic violence case. ESPN's Adam Schefter
basically said that they condemn domestic violence, that Chad Wheeler is somebody that should seek help at this point in time, and they listed the number of the national hotline that people should call for help for domestic violence.
A police report shows that a woman called police after Wheeler strangled her to the point of losing consciousness twice. And a legend has been laid to rest. A private funeral service was held in Atlanta yesterday for baseball great Hank Aaron, former baseball commissioner Bud Selig.
Henry was a man of grace, a man of patience, a man of tolerance, remarkable dignity under many tough situations.
Aaron is now buried in the historic Southview Cemetery, the oldest black cemetery in Atlanta, the final resting place of civil rights icons such as Martin Luther King Jr. and Congressman John Lewis. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Delfier.
Thank you, Sonny. Still to come on this Thursday edition of the Noon Report, the health care and climate debate going to be settled with executive orders. COVID-19 deaths in New York, bombshell report, and working from home. Get used to that.
Animals are incredible, especially the octopus, but it can never fill the God-shaped hole that's in all of our hearts. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. The new Netflix film, My Octopus Teacher, is kind of hard to categorize. It's not exactly a nature documentary, nor is it strictly narrative storytelling, and the title's strange enough by itself. Still, this film, by a documentary filmmaker named Craig Foster, has garnered glowing reviews and is a popular topic across social media. The movie follows Foster, who, in the midst of a personal crisis, decides to snorkel in the kelp forest near his South African home every day for a year. Now, I doubt I was the only one whose first thought was, wow, that must be nice to have a breathtaking coastal home where personal therapy takes the form of snorkeling. And that's just the first thing that makes the show's popularity a little puzzling, especially in this culture that analyzes all problems, every political issue, and even the identity and value of individual people in terms of who has privilege and who doesn't. Still, though it's difficult to see My Octopus Teacher without noting that cultural tension, it's also a little refreshing to see a person who has clear privilege but chooses not to dwell on it. But to be clear, My Octopus Teacher is not a movie about privilege. It's about, wait for it, an octopus. See, Foster first comes across this animal in the very early days of his year of snorkeling, and he's mesmerized. Octopi, that's the plural of octopus for the record, are incredible and, of course, strange. They have this ability to go from something that seems solid to something that becomes almost liquid in just a matter of seconds. The thousands of suction cups on the outside of their bodies are kind of like a second brain. In fact, 2/3 of their cognition happen here, according to scientists. Throughout the film, we see Foster's octopus friend swim like a fish, walk like a dog, and play games like a kid. She changes colors. When she loses an arm in a shark attack, we watch it grow back. In fact, Craig Foster's true privilege is one that God has uniquely given only his image bearers, the opportunity to just marvel at God's extravagant creativity and the fact that he lets us live in a world like this. Now, the other lesson in My Octopus Teacher comes from Foster's attempt to explain his obsession with this octopus. I just wanted to know her, he says. I just wondered what would happen if I went to the same spot every day for a year. The obsession seems strange, to be sure, but it's kind of a poignant picture of a person looking for something outside of himself, especially in this culture where almost every voice tells you to only look inside to find yourself.
Think about it. What if we approached God in this way? What if we became so obsessed with knowing Him, we spent our time and our energy essentially stalking Him every day through reading the Bible, prayer, and serving others? And what if we came to God with the same sense of expectation that Foster had? He was painfully deliberate not to impose Himself in the octopus's life. He wanted to know her, but he knew that she had to decide to reveal herself to Him. Now, the good news is we know God wants us to know Him. After all, consider the incredible lengths He has gone to in order to make Himself known in His Word, in His world, especially through His Son. My Octopus Teacher is a strange movie, but Foster's film gives a fascinating portrayal of the God-shaped hole that's in every human heart. To become obsessed with God, to follow Him around like He's the answer for our problems, to wait for Him to show Himself to us, that's the only way for our hearts to be filled and at rest. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
The cold is coming.
Good afternoon to all. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. The coldest air of the winter to date is on their way, and you're going to want to prepare for wind chills that in some places will at times be sub-zero. You want to bundle up and keep your pets in mind. Keep them sheltered from the cold as well. And the cold air passing over the lakes means lake effect. There's some hefty lake effects, though, earlier this morning southeast of Cayuga Lake and the Finger Lakes. Lake Ontario and Georgian Bay will bring more lake snows in time. Here is the call for the afternoon. Variable cloudiness, sunny breaks, areas of local lake snow and flurries, adjusting to an inch, and high temperatures in the mid-teens to the mid-20s. It'll be bitterly cold tonight through tomorrow. Variable cloudiness, areas of lake snow and flurries, a few inches of fluff southeast of Lakes Erie, Ontario, especially parts of central New York and the eastern Finger Lakes and the Chautauqua Ridge off Lake Erie. Low temperatures, single digits tonight, teens tomorrow. Wind chills frequently at or below zero.
All right, Kevin Williams, if you're just joining us, here are some of the stories we're following for you today, Thursday, January 28th. New York State Attorney General Tish James says Governor Andrew Cuomo undercounted the number of COVID-19 nursing home deaths in the state by as much as 50%. Families of nursing home residents blame the governor for ordering COVID-positive patients into those facilities last spring. The official death count at nursing homes from COVID, around 8,000. Statewide, 42,000 New Yorkers have been killed by the virus. That's more than any other state in the country. Well, here we go again, folks. More executive orders from President Biden. Today, they deal with health care. Fox News reporter Peter Ducey.
If you go to healthcare.gov right now, it says right there on the homepage that open enrollment is closed. But today, President Biden is going to announce that he is opening it back up for a special enrollment period that's going to run February 15th to May 15th. The idea is to give people who have lost coverage because they lost their jobs in the pandemic coverage during the pandemic.
President Biden also announcing today ways for low-income Americans to enroll in Medicaid and for the unemployed to get health insurance.
No one should have to choose between their livelihoods and their own health or the health of their loved ones in the middle of a deadly pandemic.
The administration also today rescinding a Trump-era policy that prevents U.S. funding for international nonprofits who provide abortions. The president takes up immigration tomorrow. Yesterday, he tackled climate change by announcing a series of far-reaching proposals, including the ban on all drilling on federal land.
We're dealing with this existential threat to the planet, and increasing our economic growth and prosperity are one and the same. When I think of climate change, I think of, and the answers to it, I think of jobs.
Former Secretary of State John Kerry is now the administration's new climate czar.
What President Biden wants to do is make sure those folks have better choices, that they have alternatives, that they can be the people who go to work to make the solar panels.
The Biden administration says it's hoping to be carbon free by the year 2035. Republicans say U.S. families already struggling in the middle of a pandemic can't wait that long. Brian Kilmeade at Fox News.
You've removed, Mr. President, 20,000 jobs with the stroke of a pen in 8 days. Yesterday, you did it again, and then you say, well, new jobs are coming. When?
Kilmeade says this president is killing thousands of jobs based on a theory, and he's doing it unilaterally. Former Texas Congressman Wesley Hunt.
With one stroke of a pen, President Joe Biden can effectively destroy potentially 1 million jobs here in the United States. And by ending the Keystone Pipeline, by banning fracking on federal grounds, and by ending drilling, that only kills jobs and it only kills our economy.
Hunt says this administration is destroying our nation's energy independence, and they're doing it in record time. 25 minutes past the hour, you're plugged into the Noon Report on Family Life.
Is Faith Under Fire. Each Thursday on Family Life, we give voice to religious battlegrounds in this nation. I'm your host, Tracy Lynn. With us today, Bodie Hodge, speaker, writer, and researcher for Answers in Genesis. Bodie, what we think of the creation account is really foundational to how we view and value life. Would you explain some ways you've seen that play out?
When we look at the world today, we see that life is broken. So when you go back to the foundation, you go back to Genesis, it gives you a proper understanding of the world and a proper understanding of life in that world. God made everything perfect. So we expected life to be perfect. We expected the world to be perfect. But of course, we're in a world that's broken. That brings us to Genesis chapter 3. When Adam and Eve, those first created people by God, sinned against God by eating from a tree they were told not to eat from, they defied God. They basically elevated their own thoughts to supersede what God had said. And as a result, the punishment for sin was death. And that's why we all die, because we were all ultimately in Adam when he sinned. The world went from a perfect state to an imperfect and broken state. But as a Christian, I love to take heart in that, because after Genesis chapter 3, the whole rest of the Bible is God solving the sin problem.
I think a lot about the news. I think about, how do we value the elderly? How do we value the life of that unborn baby in the womb? What about somebody who's disabled? How do we see all of life? And again, I think so much of it stems from our view of recognizing what you just said, what God has done for us.
Right. And, you know, we're in a culture where people have neglected what God's word said. And that's why we're seeing things like euthanasia. We're seeing abortion that's rampant, not just in the United States. Places like China are well known for their abortion. And places like Europe, they've been testing babies out to see if they might have Down syndrome or something that they see as being a bad thing. And then, boom, they want to go and abort the child. See, all this, I want you to understand, is not stemming from a biblical worldview. What it is, it's stemming from what we call a humanistic worldview. When people elevate their own thoughts to supersede what God said, that's actually the religion of humanism in its broadest sense. And the secular forms of humanism are dominating so much of the world right now. And in a secular view, they're thinking in terms of an evolutionary type of a worldview. It goes all the way back. You have what we call cosmological evolution, basically that there was some sort of a big bang or some sort of equivalent model, which says that everything ultimately came from nothing. There was no God involved. And then you have geological evolution, millions and billions of years of death, pain, struggling, and suffering. And then you have things like human evolution, where humans have supposedly evolved from single-celled organisms like an amoeba. That's the way the world is looking at life. So they do not see an intrinsic value to human life any more than they would look at intrinsic value on, say, a mosquito or a raccoon. And so when they look at abortion, they just think, oh, it's no different than killing an animal. When you kill an elderly person, it's no different from swatting a fly that's annoying you. And see, that's a false worldview. That is a false religion that so many people have been duped into believing. That's why it's so important for us to go out, teach the problems with that religion, but at the same time, preach the truth of God's word. We need to get people back to the right foundation, back to the Bible, to start to have a better understanding of life, because it's through the eyes of looking at the pages of Scripture that we understand life in a proper sense.
I think also having that proper perspective gives us hope. You know, we recognize that, wow, I am fully loved. I was thought about before I was even created, and I was created with a purpose to glorify God. Wow, that makes a difference in your perspective when you go throughout the day, when you may flub up in certain areas and, you know what I mean? Or you feel like you just fall short. Coming back to that is just such a foundation.
We're made to glorify God. We're made to have communion with God. We're made to be able to talk to God and listen to God. He gave us His word for us to be able to read. Such a beautiful form of communication. And yet, so many people in our culture are so lost about that. You know, here's the thing. I grew up in state schools. I was taught evolution. I was taught millions of years. I was taught all those types of things. And so often I was told that it is science and you just can't question the science. Well, guess what? That worldview is not science. It's a religion. When someone tries to say evolution is science, science is observable and repeatable. You cannot observe and repeat the changing of a single-celled organism into a goat. And what I want people to start realizing is that's not good, proper science. It is a religion, and so many people have been deceived into believing that. What I want them to do is not be afraid to challenge that religion. And when you challenge a religion, by what standard do you challenge a religion? You know what you do? You start with God and His Word. It is the ultimate authority in every single area, whether it's history, whether it's science, whether it's theology. God is the one that's always right.
That's Bodie Hodge with Answers in Genesis. I'm Tracy Lynn, Family Life News.
Thank you, guys. Faith Under Fire comes your way every Thursday during the Noon Report.
Good afternoon to all. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. The coldest air of the winter to date is on the way, and you're going to want to prepare for wind chills that in some places will at times be sub-zero. You want to bundle up and keep your pets in mind. Keep them sheltered from the cold as well. And the cold air passing over the lakes means lake effect. There's some hefty lake effect snow earlier this morning southeast of Cayuga Lake and the Finger Lakes. Lake Ontario and Georgian Bay will bring more lake snows in time. Here is the call for the afternoon. Variable cloudiness, sunny breaks, areas of local lake snow and flurries adjusting to an inch, and high temperatures in the mid-teens to the mid-20s. It'll be bitterly cold tonight through tomorrow. Variable cloudiness, areas of lake snow and flurries, a few inches of fluff southeast of Lake Erie, Ontario, especially parts of central New York and the Eastern Finger Lakes and the Chautauqua Ridge off Lake Erie. Low temperatures, single digits tonight, teens tomorrow. Wind chills frequently at or below zero.
All right, Kevin Williams, finally at noon, working from home, about to become commonplace in America. Family Life's Bob Price.
Yeah, at the beginning of the pandemic, employees were forced to work from home, and that pushed people to learn new technology as they sheltered in place with COVID lurking at our door. Now, working from home may become indefinite for a lot of folks. According to the National Association for Business Economics, just 1 in 10 companies today expect their employees to return back to their normal pre-pandemic routine. More employers than ever before are developing hybrid approaches that allow people to work both from home and at the office. Bob Price, Family Life News.
Thank you, Bob. That's the world we live in this Thursday. As always, thanks for coming along. I'm Bill Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.